America Radio proudly presents the Tom Hartman Program. Welcome to the Free Speech Zone.
Yeah, it's the real Free Speech Zone. We won't drag you off if there is a no blood for oil bumper sticker on your car, as we now know was actually ordered by the Bush administration. Top of the day to you here, Tom Hartman with you. James Marcinkowski is on the line with us. He's a former CIA officer, and here's a quote from him in his testimony. A blown cover probably happens more than anyone would like, but the deliberate exposure and identification of Ambassador Joe Wilson's wife by our own government was unprecedented, unnecessary, harmful, and dangerous. James Marcinkowski.
Good morning, Tom. Pleasure to be with you.
Great to have you here with us. You knew Valerie Plame.
Yes, I did. We trained together at the CIA. We started in the training class together back in 1985.
And she was undercover.
We were all undercover. I know there's the perception out there that perhaps some people in the CIA are not undercover. I tell people all the time, I said, listen, this is a spy agency. If you're operating as a spy, there's no such thing as a non-covert spy.
Yeah.
You simply can't travel overseas.
Well, there was this one article in the Washington Times, Reverend Moon's newspaper,
yes.
out of Washington, D.C., that gets quoted, it seems like 15 or 20 times a day by conservative talking heads on all the shows, that said that all her neighbors knew that she worked for the CIA and all her friends knew and it was an open secret on the cocktail circuit, blah-de-blah-de-blah. But it seems that all the testimony contradicts that.
It absolutely contradicts that. As a matter of fact, her aside from her immediate family, no one knew that she worked. I'm talking about her relatives and friends outside of her immediate family.
Yeah.
Joe Wilson's brothers and sisters and things like that, they didn't know. So I see that repeated over and over again. But it's simply not true. The fact of the matter is they plant one story like that, then it gets repeated and kind of boomerangs around the country.
If she was the head of Brewster Jennings, which is that part of the reports is presumably accurate, and Brewster Jennings was an international front company that the CIA was running that was offering to sell weapons of mass destruction to terrorists or participate in the selling and the transfer of funds, therefore, as way of a kind of a semi-sting operation or finding out what's going on, an intelligence gathering operation. And it had offices around the world, and it had agents around the world, and she was known as the head of it. Everybody would have to refer back to her for decision-making. Then is it reasonable to assume that when her identity was made public by Robert Novak, that agents or officers around the world who were working with and for Brewster Jennings and also with terrorist groups may have been killed?
That's a very distinct possibility. What you have to do in these situations is walk it back or reverse engineer what's happened here, which is done by hostile intelligence agencies against our agents all around the world. That is, once an agent is exposed, like Valerie was exposed, what they do is they walk it back through all their records and find out what countries she visited, who she visited with,
right.
Who else is associated with the firm, and then the whole cover story, the whole Brewster Jennings story gets unraveled. And everyone who had any association with Brewster Jennings in any way, directly, indirectly, maybe inadvertently, will immediately become suspect of being intelligence operatives.
And is at risk?
Absolutely.
Why has there been no investigation into this, at least public? I'm assuming the CIA did an internal investigation on this, but why has there been no public discussion of it, no congressional inquiry, and frankly no discussion of this in the media? It seems that if this had happened during the Clinton administration, that Bill Clinton would be crucified.
Well, there's certainly a double standard when it comes to this administration and the basically the conservative extremists who want to take a particular point of view. Fact of the matter is, and what is routine in this kind of a situation is that the intelligence agency itself will do a damage assessment.
Mm.
They will list out all the perhaps other CIA officers that may have used that cover. In turn, all the agents that may have been working for those case officers associated with Brewster Jennings. And I am quite certain that has probably been done. Maybe it's not complete, but it's certainly a routine operation once an agent is exposed. So they have to do that damage assessment. And it probably is very highly classified because it does expose the actual people that could have been exposed as a result of Valerie Plame's identity being exposed by the White House.
Right. We're speaking with former CIA officer James Marcinkowski, who trained with Valerie Plame and knew her. And, sir, it seems to me that there's a particular and fairly on-the-record series of events that have led up to this moment. The beginning was in the very, very early spring of 2001, right after George Bush was appointed president by the Supreme Court. And there was a break-in, a third-rate burglary, at the home of the ambassador of Niger and at the office of the ambassador of Niger in Italy. And the woman who was arrested for it turned out to be a member of Italy's Secret Service. All that was stolen was letterhead and official seals. That was all reported in La Repubblica and other sources in Italy at the time. Then, a few months later, this was in, I believe, May of 2001, Silvio Berlusconi, the Prime Minister of Italy and a multi-billionaire and one of the most conservative of all of the prime ministers in Europe, and a friend of Bush's and in some ways kind of an imitator of Bush, comes to the United States and presents to George W. Bush documents that purport to be on the Nigerian embassy's letterhead with the official seals that purport to be essentially a receipt for the transfer of several hundred tons of yellow cake uranium from Niger to Saddam Hussein. Now, why Saddam Hussein would want a receipt for something he's supposed to be getting illegally is a question nobody seemed to ask.
Very interesting, yes.
Right. And these were turned over to the CIA in the summer of 2001. Now, this is all before 9/11.
Yes.
These were turned over to the CIA in the summer of 2001, and the CIA reported back that they were obvious forgeries, that several of the names of the people on them, for example, one of the guys who theoretically signed them had died 2 years earlier. And so that was the end of that. Then, a month after 2001, in October of 2001, there's a meeting in Rome with Doug Feith's assistant, Ahmed Chalabi, and a fellow from the Italian Secret Service and a representative of British Secret Service, and they decide to recycle these documents through British Secret Service. Now, at this point, George Bush knows that this is a phony document. The CIA knows these are phony documents. And yet, almost a year later, this appears in his State of the Union address, his reference to these documents. This is part of an organized campaign to sell a war to the American people using a lie.
And absolutely correct.
And that's what Joe Wilson was pointing out in his editorial in the New York Times. Now, it seems to me, A, that lying to the American people about a reason for a war that has resulted in the death of thousands of Americans and hundreds of thousands of other human beings should be, at the very least, as much of an impeachable crime as lying about having sex, you know, with a consenting adult in the White House. And number two, I'm curious why the CIA and the media have been so very, very silent about this. Is it that the conservatives are all screaming pardon, pardon, pardon about Libby so loudly that it's just captured the news cycle and there's no oxygen left to discuss the actual history of this thing?
Well, I'm very disappointed with what the media doesn't do out of Washington, D.C. I can tell you this, it can add a little bit to that story. It's my understanding that those documents, before they went to Berlusconi, actually were presented to the CIA station chief in Italy, and he refused them on his face, did not accept them, which is very unusual for a CIA office, because it was clearly forged documents. Now, what happened, you mentioned Doug Feith and those folks out of the Pentagon. What was happening here during the whole time is the CIA was calling the right shots on this war. They were saying, wait a minute, on weapons of mass destruction, they were saying a lot of things that were ignored by this White House. So they weren't getting the answers that they wanted to. That's why the vice president went over there, met with the analysts, and of course, when you're meeting with the vice president, you're going to produce something that the vice president wants, as a mid-level government employee. My point being, they did not like what the CIA was saying. So they fired up Don Rumsfeld's Defense Intelligence Agency.
Right, the Office of Special Plans.
Absolutely. Yeah. And they went over there and they collected it themselves. And they're amateurs. This is clearly a matter that should have been handled exclusively by the CIA. It wasn't. It was turned over to the Defense Intelligence Agency at the Pentagon. They were certainly producing, if you want to use that word, intelligence that the White House wanted to hear.
So here's the $64,000 question. We're talking with former CIA officer James Marcinkowski. Was the outing of Valerie Plame to either A, try to stop the story dead in its tracks, in other words, to try and discredit Joe Wilson, who was the most credible spokesperson who was saying, hey, the Bush administration's lying to you about the reasons for this war.
Right.
Or was it to say to the CIA, who had been, as you point out, had been saying all along to the Bush administration, you guys are wrong. There's no there. There's no weapons there. You don't have anything to worry about from Saddam Hussein. And so aggressively, in fact, that the Bush administration created their own mini CIA over in the Department of Defense, the Office of Special Plans.
Correct.
Was this a way of threatening you guys in the CIA that, hey, listen, if you continue talking like this or any of your relatives do, we're going to take you down? Or was this simply a way of trying to discredit Joe Wilson, or was it both?
Well, you know what? The answers to A and B are both yes. I think it was a double-edged thing. The first question I think has to be asked here is look, why would they take the unprecedented act of exposing one of our own CIA agents? That's number one. The fact that they went so far, first time in history it's been done by the White House, first time an agent's been released by an act of the U.S. government, okay?
Right.
Never mind the bad guys. So number one, why would you do that unless you were very, very concerned about what you're doing behind the scenes and being exposed for what you were doing? So you take drastic action as a result of the action you already took and need to cover up by any means possible. So yes, the first part of that was to attack Joe Wilson because he was the only guy that stood up at that time and said, wait, hold the bus here. This is not correct. And we're going to go into a war and get a bunch of people killed, and obviously that's what we're doing right now today. The second part of it, absolutely. You know, there's a huge signal that went out to the CIA saying, look, you disagree with this administration, and this is what's going to happen to you. We'll end your career. That's the part.
And yeah. Do you think that the behavior of people in the CIA changed as a result of that?
Oh, certainly. I mean, when something like this happens, you're going to have this in the back of your mind going, okay, wait a minute, you know, am I comfortable in producing or passing on intelligence that they may not like politically? Mm-hmm. Certainly you're going to couch it in different terms, those kinds of things. But the other damage here is to the people of the United States and the protection of the people of the United States, because you got to think about it this way. If you as a CIA officer are running assets in foreign countries, that being the little spies on the ground that a CIA officer will control and mm-hmm. run, their first concern always is their own security. After Valerie was exposed, I will guarantee you that every one of those folks that are risking their life to spy on behalf of the United States and these countries will ask this question. You say my security is important, but if your government won't protect your security and your identity, how can I expect you guys to protect my identity and my family?
In other words, it became so much harder for the CIA to recruit associates, agents around
yes.
the world.
And to keep them. Correct.
Right. Yep. Right.
So the damage was huge.
Yeah.
It was huge worldwide.
Former CIA officer James Marcinkowski, is there a website or any information for you that you'd like our listeners to know about? Any books you've written or anything like that? Or
I haven't. I have a post occasionally on noquarter.com.
Okay. Noquarter.typepad.com. Larry
yes.
Johnson's blog.
Larry Johnson's blog,
great.
Yes.
Great. James, thanks so much for being with us today.
My pleasure.
James Marcinkowski. Formerly of the Central Intelligence Agency. 19 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Our number 866-303-2270. Drop by our live chat room over at tomhartman.com, the blog at airamerica.com. We'll be back. More news of the day and your calls right after this.
You're tuned in to the Tom Hartman Program. Fair and slightly unbalanced. This is Air America Radio.
Or that Muhammad was a fraud, or that people questioned Muhammad. Now, they have done films or documentaries on Islam, but
sure they
didn't
have. Do you think that Easter is under attack?
I'm sorry, what?
Are you agreeing with Bill O'Reilly that the Easter Bunny is under attack?
The Easter Bunny? No, I'm not agreeing with. I didn't hear that comment, but I don't like to agree with Bill O'Reilly. He's not one of my favorite other personalities.
Okay. So, or John Gibson, he says there's a new war on Easter mantra coming.
I think there has been an attack on the Christian. The Catholic League did a great press release on this. If you go to their website at CatholicLeague.org, you can look at all the things that have happened, as I said, over the last 15, 20 years, and every story comes out at Easter time, and every story is always about, you know, did Christ really resurrect from the dead? Was he married to Mary Magdalene? You know, it's like, come on, give us something new. If you have some evidence here.
Are the questions that people have been asking for 2,000 years.
Okay, so why aren't they asking it about Muhammad?
Well, they certainly are.
Okay, has done an expose on Muhammad calling him a fraud? Well, network has done that? Because that's what they've done to Christianity for the past 20 years.
All righty. Teresa Tomeo, Teresa Tomeo dot com, the website. Teresa, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you.
Good talking to you. 16 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. 866-303-2270.
Well, maybe I'm crazy. Maybe it's no big deal. It's just my opinion. It's just how I feel. I dream of a world that's not all the same. Where freedom is more than a word that we say. Where you can say what you think. And no one would dare put you down. I dream of a world that's a two-paper town.
And welcome back to the radio support group of By and For We, the people of the United States of America, of the planet Earth, and of all living things. Let me say, I am inclined to agree more with Jesus' suggestion that you know, look at the fruit of the tree. James, by their works they're known. James, presumably the brother of Jesus. Then Paul, you know, by confession, by statements, you are saved. Frankly, I'll just put that out. And I think it's, enough said about that, I guess. You know, in that context, then what is the real issue, the real fundamental issue? I mean, you've got O'Reilly now. I guarantee you, the Fox noise machine is going to be gearing up as we head toward Easter. Into Easter is under attack, and you've got all these conservative Christians who are saying, oh, you know, how can they even dare talk about a tomb that might have been Jesus's? And I think that the fundamental teachings of Christianity and Judaism and Islam and Buddhism and Hinduism and Wicca and, I mean, right across the board, the fundamental teachings all boil down to what I recited earlier from Matthew 25. And interestingly, 1985, the great U-turn, this Reaganomics and the millionaire boom, this is 4 years into the presidency of Ronald Reagan. According to the IRS, the number of millionaires in the United Nations in the nation had doubled since he came into office. But the wealth was not necessarily distributed evenly. To a large degree, the rich prospered while the poor suffered. From 1977 to 1990, the wealthiest fifth of the population saw their income swell by one-third. The wealthiest 1% fared even better. Their incomes doubled. During the same period, the combined income of the bottom 60% of Americans declined. Economists Barry Bluestein and Bennett Harrison called this the fiscal shift the Great U-Turn. The first 4 years of the Reagan administration, we're seeing the exact same thing happen again under Bushonomics. I would say that is essentially not Christian. That is essentially anti-Christian, the kind of economics that's practiced by the people who are the first to run around waving the flag of and professing their adherence to a particular religious doctrine. At the same time, Bill Gates, testifying before Congress, the chairman of Microsoft, yesterday, that warning that he wants to be able to, we need to be able to allow skilled workers to come into the United States on a virtually unlimited basis. Mr. Gates said he felt deep anxiety about the U.S.'s ability to remain competitive if it did not act to improve education, invest in basic science research, and reform its immigration policies. Bring me more cheap labor, please. He called on Congress to loosen rules that prevented many foreign students from settling once their studies in the U.S. are complete. He also suggested that Congress speed the process of obtaining permanent resident status for highly skilled workers. Now, he did point out that he thinks that our schools are not doing a good job. I would have liked to have seen a whole lot more emphasis on that, and Bill Gates saying, why don't you members of Congress put some money into our schools and let's produce some good students. On the other hand, I suspect if we didn't have these H-1B visa programs and other programs like this that allow companies like Microsoft to bring in engineers from all over the world, and instead these companies were essentially forced to work with the engineers that we have here in the United States, that they would be putting political pressure on this administration to improve our schools. And the conservative captains of industry, instead of running around going, it's my tax dollars. No, I don't want any tax cut. How dare our tax increase? I only want tax cuts. That's the only way we can. Their tune would change. But no, their tune is bring in more cheap labor from outside. And at the same time here, now this story in the Roanoke Times by Duncan Adams and Christina Rogers, the headline, Bassett closes factory in company town. In 90 days, Bassett will lose 280 jobs in one hometown factory. In February, this is just in this one little area in Henry County in West Virginia. In February, Pulaski Furniture announces closing of last U.S. plant, 260 employees. In January, Hooker Furniture announces closing of Martinsville plant, 280 employees. In June, Hooker Furniture announces Roanoke plant closing, 280 employees. March 2006, Rowe Furniture announces layoffs in Elliston, 37 employees. And what happens to Bassett when they close down their factory and lay off 280 people? Their stock price went up 57 cents. It went up. Here's the story. Imports have kneecapped another manufacturer in Henry County and cut down 280 more jobs. Workers at Bassett Furniture Industries plant in Bassett learned Monday afternoon that the furniture company plans to begin shuttering its hometown factory within 90 days. The closing will affect about 15% of their workforce. Why? Bassett Furniture executives said the company will import from overseas the majority of the products now manufactured in its 323,000-square-foot factory in Bassett. It's going to destroy this town, says Mary Musselman, co-owner of Joe and Mary's Cafe across the street from the Bassett plant, a restaurant she's owned for 15 years. Is this the Christian thing to do? Or, as I said, the Jewish thing or the Hindu thing or the Muslim thing? We need to have policies in this country that put the people first. We really do, rather than the corporations and the extremely wealthy. 27 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman with you. We'll be back with your calls right after this.
You're listening to Tom Hartman, defending America from the weapons of mass deception on Air America Radio.
Nova M. Phoenix, 1480 KPHX.
Welcome back. Defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception. Tom Hartman here with you. Jack Murtha, speaking of wanting the truth, he says, okay, that's it. We're gonna go after these Republicans where it hurts, with their defense contractors, their big campaign donors. We're going to cut the funds to these guys. Here he is.
Contractor. When I was in Iraq with a speaker, the contractor fall all over themselves. I asked the GAO and the Inspector General, how many contractors do you have? I asked the Undersecretary of Defense. He says, I'll let you know tomorrow. We've never gotten an answer back. GAO and Inspector General in Iraq said, help us get a handle on the contractors. So we took 5% of their money out, and that's about $800 million. We also fenced 10% of the money. We want answers about whether these contractors, how much it costs us, how many we have, and how the contracts are being given to these various organizations.
That's pretty mind-boggling. 5%, if 5% of the contractor's money is $800 million, that's $1.6 billion, that's $16 billion. Is this for 1 year? Just going to contractors? We need to parse the information out a little more carefully, but anyhow, 1-866-303-2270, our telephone number. Suzanne in Castro Valley, California. Hey, Suzanne, what's up?
Hi, I was calling about, on topic, weapons of mass deception. My background is in marketing, and one of the things I'm kind of really getting frustrated with as a liberal is seeing all of our symbols of America coming to represent conservatism. So, like, if you see a car with a big American flag, you assume they're Republican.
Right.
And I think we as Democrats and liberals need to recapture those symbols. So,
yes, I agree.
Make a bumper sticker that says, you know, has the American flag and says liberty and justice for all. Because I saw that.
Or liberal and proud. Liberal and patriotic.
Yeah, and has an American flag. I love the ones that have the peace sign on them. They're beautiful. That are made the rainbow color. Those are great. But I want the regular American flag to be recognized for what it really stands for, which is liberty and justice for all. And that's the liberal message. So we need to recapture those. That's what I was hoping. This radio station, you know, as you do your songs and your theme songs, make it quick snippets of, true American message is really the message you guys are spreading.
Amen. Suzanne, thank you very much. And well said. And also notice that the stars in the American flag are right side up, the five-pointed star. And the stars on the GOP logo are upside down, sort of like the goat's head, you know, the two horns at the top and the chin at the bottom and the ears on the side, which is some consider to be a satanic symbol. That's the GOP logo. I'm serious. Go to the Republican Party's website, GOP.org or whatever it is, and you can see for yourself. So, yeah, we absolutely need to reclaim the symbols of American patriotism. Mark in Florence, Oregon. Hey, Mark.
Morning, Tom. That's the goat of Mendes, that satanic symbolized version mm-hmm. of the upside down star, which is essentially the same as Satan to the proponents of that symbol.
And you will find three of them on above an elephant as the official GOP logo. They flipped the stars upside down in the year 2000.
Yes, I know of no other symbolic meaning outside of the goat of Mendes for when the stars turned upside down.
Okay.
Tom, as far as the Libby trial, there is a good bit of smoking gun evidence there that points right to the vice president. There is other evidence which circumstantially points right to the president and the orchestration of the outing of Valerie Plame. By the way, also her outing accomplished a much lower degree and quality of intelligence in the Middle East as far as nuclear arms proliferation that would be monitored there by the CIA as Brewster Jennings was doing. Once Brewster
That's
Jennings
right.
was gone, this gave them much leeway for their future incursion into Iran, at least.
Yeah, and I think we need to be looking a little deeper into some of these things. For example, the reports that Brewster Jennings was involved in actually intercepting or stopping or alerting the government in a way that they had to stop a shipment of weapons of mass destruction from Turkey into Iraq shortly after the Iraq war started that would have been conveniently discovered by U.S. soldiers and would have been proof that Saddam had weapons of mass destruction. Whether that's an urban legend or whether that's real, somebody should look into it because it certainly has a lot of legs. Mark, thank you for the comments. Well said. Tracy in New Canaan, Connecticut. How do you say it, Tracy?
New Canaan, Connecticut.
There you go.
Thanks for taking the call. I enjoyed the show, and I think it's so important for you to get your message out there because the regular media is got a right-wing agenda, and I have a sister. I have frustration in my family because my sister, she always knows exact. She repeats the buzzwords of the mainstream media, and we get into these arguments all the time. But so I asked her about the Valerie Plame thing. I'd like to know what is it that's getting out there in that media, and her answer was, she just got her husband to go on that trip, and that fact coming up is that issue.
Yeah.
She gave her husband a job, and they never follow through with what's the implication of that? What are they implying? It was a free trip for him, like a beautiful vacation in Niger? Because
just what we all want, right?
A junkie in Niger? I mean, what? She got him a job. Yeah. I assume he was her cover. How do you get a blonde lady like that into Niger?
She didn't actually go to Niger. He did, but he went because he had been an ambassador in Africa, and he had been an ambassador. He was our last ambassador to Baghdad.
He knew the
issues. He had been stationed in these places. He was familiar with them, and whether she recommended him or not, frankly doesn't matter. The fact of the matter is that he came out and he said the administration is lying to you about the cause for war, and they have been lying for some time. And that was the story that the Bush administration knew that they had to shut down, because that's the story that leads directly to Bush and Cheney committing what, in my opinion, are impeachable offenses. 1-866-303-2270. Mick in San Francisco. Hey, Mick, what's up?
Hey, Tom, pleasure to talk to you. I was first actually alerted to your existence with the When Democracy Failed, a beautiful article you wrote on Common Dreams a few years ago. You've been a real inspiration, I think, for a lot of people, including me. I know this has been talked about a lot. The Vermont townships, I guess 36 of them now, voting for impeachment. And I want to suggest that we all call Peter Welch, which is the, I'm sure you talked about this as well, but the representative of the House of Representatives who...
Right, the congressman from Vermont. Yeah.
Right.
His own hometown voted in favor of impeachment.
Exactly. They're trying to get him to introduce articles. In the
As did the governor's hometown, by the way. The governor was rather unhappy about that. I mean, you know, many of the public officials' hometowns said, yes, vote for impeachment. So, you know, we'll see how this shakes out. I think to some extent it's going to depend on how much pressure we put on Congress and how much pressure, frankly, we put on the mainstream media and the corporate media, let's say. I mean, you know, some would say our points of view do represent mainstream America. So it's a misnomer to call CBS, ABC and NBC the mainstream media. But, you know, it's the label that's stuck, I suppose. But the corporate media, in any case, to say to them, enough already. We need to move along. Pam, thanks for the call. Pam in Redmond, Washington. Hey, Pam, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I was responding to the woman you were talking to earlier that she was concerned about the attacks on Lent or whatever. And
right, the purity of Christianity.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I was fortunate enough to go to a talk a couple of nights ago by Michael Dowd. Are you familiar with him?
I'm not sure.
Well, he has... he and his wife, Connie, travel around the country. Basically, they have no particular home, but they're promoting, well, not promoting, but they're talking about what they call the great story, which is the story of the cosmos. But the way he talks about it, he can address everyone from a Buddhist to a Unitarian to an evangelical to, in fact, on his website, he has all these people from different religions that endorse the way he presents this because it is a universal language. And,
yeah, absolutely. And there's a number of religions that kind of bring that together. Unity, for
well,
example,
it's,
in the
yeah,
States
but
is
this isn't a religion. I mean, his isn't a
or
religion.
Groups.
What his idea is to go beyond this one, anyone, or to go underneath and to use a language that unites us so that we can continue to survive basically in this cosmos. And it's called The Great Story is the way he headlines it, but that's not nearly enough to say what it is. But there's a website, and I was hoping maybe you would explore it, and I'd like to put it out there for other people.
What's the URL?
It's www.the, and then great, but the G in great is capitalized, story, and the S in story is capitalized, .org.
Okay, great. And actually, in URLs, before you hit a backslash, whether a letter is capitalized or not doesn't matter.
Okay. And then there's another site that is specifically for those people who are into the Christianity element, and it's www.evolutionarychristianity.org.
Okay. Pam, thanks a lot. It's interesting. I'll have to check it out. I think that there's room for all of us here, frankly. I mean, that's my position. I think there's room for all of us. 45 minutes past the hour. In heaven as well. 45 minutes past the hour. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Transforming the World by Revitalizing Democracy. Forgiveness. Interesting. I think that gratitude and forgiveness are the two most powerful forces that humans have. Anyhow, time now for an activism alert. What we can do.
May take a week, May take longer. we going to do? Well, we have to work against fast track. This is the bottom line. David Sirota just wrote a great piece. I saw it over at workingforchange.com. Congress's upcoming free trade brawl, the good, the bad, and the ugly. Our activism alert for the day. Major farm and labor groups have announced campaigns to defeat Fast Track. Fast Track basically lets the president strip out of trade legislation human rights, labor rights, and environmental provisions. And Bush wants this renewed, and all it takes is 40 senators to say no. That's all it takes, only 40 to stop it. And this is the same coalition that Clinton and Rahm Emanuel used to ram NAFTA through Congress is trying to push for fast track again. And your senators need to hear from you. Our senators need to hear from us that we don't want the president to have fast track authority. We've got enough lousy trade deals as it is. Let's not have more of them, and B, let's not make them worse. Mark in Maine, listening on 870, The Voice. Hey, Mark, what's up?
Hey, how you doing? I'd like to make a comment about Scoot Olivia, if I could.
Sure.
I was watching the TV last night, and I certainly saw the Republicans represented from all the pundits as to a pardon. And I almost fell out of my chair because I was expecting something different when I came home from work. And I called all my representatives from Maine, and I asked them kindly that who's going to represent the 60-plus percent of the people in this country who aren't being heard on the TV, who are being told that since he presented himself well in court and he's a nice guy, that he should be let off. So I asked them,
right,
and I want my main representatives to go on the floor right now and say that all the pot dealers in the state should be freed because they were working for the big cartels. Any drug dealer on the street in prison right now should be freed because that's basically the mentality.
Well, frankly, I think
they use behind this, since Dick Cheney authorized it, that Scoot Olivia is a scapegoat, the fall guy, is ridiculous. He's been a neocon forever, and he's had this plan. They've all had this plan.
He's been part of the conspiracy. You're absolutely right, Mark, and well said, and I salute you for having contacted your elected representatives spot on. Doug in Ann Arbor, Michigan. Hey, Doug, what's up?
Hi. I just wanted to say that I love you very much, and I'm glad I lived long enough to hear you. I won't tarnish you. I'm not a Democrat, I'm not a Christian, and I'm not a capitalist, but I believe the problem is with the political culture in the country. That's why Hillary Clinton has to do despicable things to get elected. Bill tried to be progressive in Arkansas and got shot down. You have unfortunate rabid Republicans and wanted the mission and wanted to kick in doors in Fallujah. You can't tell a truck driver who's earning $80,000 a year that he shouldn't be a Reagan Democrat. Then you get the underclass, which does not vote. So, in short, Abby Hoffman said, America will never be a socialist society, and he committed suicide. Excuse me. And so, in the long term...
You think so? I don't think he committed suicide. You know, he was working on an expose about George W. Bush.
Abby Hoffman, he took Valium.
For Penthouse Magazine. He was working on an expose. He died in that hotel room.
From taking a massive overdose of Valium.
That's the official story.
Diazepam. Yeah. Oh, was he murdered, you said?
Yeah.
Anyway.
I think so.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I really do. Doug, I got to move along. I appreciate the call, though, and thank you for your kind words. Ellen Ratner's on the line with the Talk Radio News Service. I wanted to find out what's going on in Washington, D.C. TalkRadioNews.com.
Hey, Ellen. In an interview with U.S. News and World Report, and he essentially has argued that there is no linkage between the Louis Libby situation, Scooter Libby, and other administration problems. He said there's no dots to connect.
Yeah, right.
Right.
We had a guy from the CIA on this program earlier saying this goes all the way back to the third-rate burglary in Rome in the spring of 2001 when a woman who was later demonstrated to be working for Berlusconi's intelligence service broke into the residence and the office of the ambassador from Niger and stole only letterhead and official seals. And suddenly Berlusconi and Italian intelligence are peddling this, hey, we've got proof of yellowcake uranium and Saddam stuff to George W. Bush in May when Berlusconi came over here. This is all before 9/11. They're trying to help Bush sell this war. And then after 9/11, they recycled the stuff, and then it gets into Bush's State of the Union address when he knows it's a lie. He's already been told it's a lie.
Why am I not surprised?
I am actually. I mean, this is what they were covering up.
I am actually up here on the Hill today in the Senate side, and there are several groups. In fact, we just had lunch, and there were like a million vets, and they are all over Mitch McConnell, who, as you know, is the minority leader, because they want to he wants to stop a vote and the Senate final vote and amendments that would actually help with the 9/11 recommendations. S-4 is the security bill, and right. They are trying to press him now into letting go of his opposition. And I'm telling you, I've never seen so many vets in my life in wheelchairs and hats, and the place is just completely crawling with them. Meanwhile, Senator Clinton is taking advantage of this issue, and she says that she wants a new GI Bill of Rights, and she is going after the Bush administration on military care.
Well, you know, if there's some political hay to be made and it gets made in a good way, I'm all in favor of that.
Well, I'm in favor of it as well. And the other thing that is really tight up here is this issue of Heather Wilson and also Pete Domenici and them trying to influence the investigation by the attorney.
And Doc, what's his name? Doc Hastings from Washington State as well. Apparently.
And, of course, they have hired attorneys.
Yeah, they're all lawyering up as quickly as they can and wise to do it. Ellen Radner with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com. Ellen, thank you so much.
Thank you.
It's good talking with you. 57 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here. Greg Palast with us right after this.
Tom Hartman, live on Nova M Phoenix, 1480 KPHX.
Air America Radio proudly presents the Tom Hartman Program, Truth in Broadcasting.
And welcome back. Greg Palast is with us, my an old friend, my fellow ADD maniac multitasker and the author of a New York Times bestseller, Armed Madhouse, from Baghdad to New Orleans, Sordid Secrets and Strange Tales of a White House Gone Wild. New edition to be released April 24th. All available over at Greg Palast, PALAST.com. Hey, Greg.
How you doing?
I am absolutely great, but I'll get better. How about you?
Well, at least we have some convictions these days, right?
There you go.
There you go.
Oh, yeah. Hey, not just the courage of our convictions, the courage of Scooter's conviction. You write in your most recent piece here over at GregPalast.com and on fine websites all over the world. There's only one thing worse than sacking an honest prosecutor. That's replacing an honest prosecutor with a criminal. Say what?
Yeah. Believe it or not, I know this is going to be hard for you to believe, but George Bush did something that is questionably ethical.
Really?
What happened, there's been this huge and justifiably huge outrage over Bush firing 8 of his own prosecutors, all Republicans, clearly because they wouldn't knuckle under to Karl Rove's political demands.
Right.
But what has not been covered is who he replaced these guys with, and one of them is Rove's own assistant, a guy named Tim Griffin. And when I heard the name Tim Griffin as a new prosecutor, a bell rang in my head, went through my old memos that were sucked out of the Republican National Committee machines that are supposed to be confidential. Tim Griffin is the man who was Mr. Big behind the scheme to challenge hundreds of thousands of black voters in the 2004 election. It's a system.
You're talking about caging in Ohio?
Caging list. And we have, I have his memos. And by the way, the reason, it's not like Karl Rove's office is sending Greg Palast his memos just to see what I think. What happened was is that Tim Griffin, Rove's a hound dog there, is not the sharpest knife in the drawer. And he sent, instead of his schemes, his illegal schemes, to his cronies at georgewbush.com, he sent them to georgewbush.org, and friends of ours own that domain site. The emails went to them, sucked through to us at BBC Television, and we were basically reading Karl Rove's assistant's secret scheming plan. And you have to understand, what does this mean, Cajunless? What he did was, they sent out hundreds of thousands of letters, the Republican National Committee, to African-American voters, and in particular, students, men in homeless shelters, and black soldiers sent overseas, sent them letters, registered or first class, saying do not forward. If those letters came back from their voting addresses, they then challenged the right of those voters to vote, or in the case of the soldiers, if they sent in absentee ballots, their vote wouldn't count because they would be challenged. Now, of course, I even called one of these soldiers' families, Randall Prousa, was one we got a hold of. We said, where is Mr. Prousa? Is he at this address? And they said, no, he's been sent overseas. He was a soldier out of the Jacksonville Naval Air Station. And in other words, they were saying these people did not live at their voting addresses. Well, of course they didn't. The president sent them to Fallujah.
Right. So, right. But that does. Yeah. So now they're no longer qualified to vote, according to the Republican Party.
According to the Republican Party.
According to Mr. Griffin.
Yeah, according to Mr. Griffin, well, what they did was they did mount the challenge. They mounted in Florida alone, for example, 70,000 challenges.
In 2004?
And this is complete. And by the way, those challenges and the caging lists were covered by BBC television, top of the nightly news. The rest of the planet was horrified at how the U.S. continued to conduct its elections.
Right, but none of the corporate media in the United States even touched this.
And story. I was asked, by the way, why Tim Griffin was not prosecuted for this scheme or the rest of the RNC.
Right.
And I said, well, who's in charge of the Justice Department? Well, guess what? As of today, Mr. Griffin is now wearing the sheriff's badge. He is now chief law enforcement officer for Arkansas as U.S. Prosecutor.
Right.
And the guy that he replaced has come out, a Republican, by the way. A Republican came out and said, I was removed because I refused to knuckle under to political pressure. What he didn't say is, by the way, I'm being replaced by a guy who committed this type of targeting, by the way, is a felony crime. I just spoke to a well-known elections lawyer named Bobby Kennedy, who said, this is a crime. This is a go-to-jail crime.
And not only is this guy who has committed these crimes on behalf of Karl Rove and the Republican Party now the chief law enforcement officer down in Arkansas, but it's Arkansas. It's Hillary Clinton's home, you know, state. It's the place where if you want to dig up dirt on the Clintons and start the prosecutions before you bring back Ken Starr, before you've taken the White House, you do it now.
You have a bad attitude, Tom.
I do.
Do you really,
I
think really that Karl Rove's assistant is going to misuse his new office?
I truly do, Greg. I'm sorry to
see. I don't speculate like that. I know he's already misused the office he's had, so I don't speculate about the future. I mean, this is no kidding. This is a guy who should be doing, you know, hard time under the law, and instead he is wearing a badge. And no U.S. media, by the way, has covered this. Again, this is big news in the rest of the planet. You know, they're horrified, and you wonder why there is a kind of a low opinion of the characters in the White House and the rest of the world. That's because they get the news about the characters in the White House.
Right. Wasn't there an attorney general named Griffin in like the Reagan administration? Is Tim Griffin related to anybody?
No, there was a Griffin in the Carter administration who was attorney general. Okay.
Yeah,
but that's pretty good. You almost would have won Trivia Pursuit, but close but no cigar. Yeah, but the good memory. But yeah, so
nothing's being done about all this caging that went on where black voters, by and large, were denied the right to vote in the 2000. I mean, in the 2000 election, I guess
most people know about that. That was famous. Yeah, now
it happened in 2004 as well.
Yeah, I broke the story in 2000 about how voters were purged because black voters were purged because they were called felons and when they were convicted of nothing but voting while black, right?
Right.
This was the new scheme. This replaced the felon con with suspect addresses, they called it, which it actually grabbed a wider group. And again, this whole business of sending a letter to your voting address, but knowing you're not, you know, there's a good chance you won't be there. And as soon as they get the return undeliverable because it says do not forward or signature required, then they attack your right to vote. And so students, there was a homeless man. So, by the way, I did speak to the Republican Party about it. I tried to reach Mr. Griffin himself in Washington at the time, and he refused to speak to me. However, one of his hench persons spoke to me, this woman, Mindy Tucker Fletcher, from the Republican Party, and when I showed her the caging lists on camera, she said, oh, those are our donors.
Yeah,
and
I
showed her page after page of guys in homeless shelters. You mean that's where Bush Cheney does a lot of their fundraising?
Right.
Okay. try another one. At BBC, we always give you two answers. If the first one is clearly a freaking fraud.
Right, right.
And, you know, so then they started going through circles and dancing. See, because the reason is that, as Bobby Kennedy pointed out to me, this is not only against the law to target voters where color is, their skin is a factor, but the Republican National Committee had signed a consent decree with the courts because they did this game during the Reagan administration 25 years ago.
Right.
And they were caught, and they promised never to do it again. So what you have here is a repeat offender. The difference being is that in 1980, in that time, you still had some honest people in control of the Justice Department who basically banged the Republican Party. Now what happens is if you commit a felony, you become
appointed
prosecutor.
That's right. You get promoted. We have less than a minute, Greg, talking with you. Is there going to be any fallout to this? Is there any way that our listeners can help there be some fallout to this?
Well, I really would like to see Conyers' committee. He's a terrific guy. The big bonus of the Democrats winning is Conyers becomes chairman of Judiciary, so does Kennedy on the Senate side.
Right.
Let's see if they can revisit this issue of the firing of the prosecutors and now talk about the criminals that are now taking their place.
Right, not just the political pressure that's being brought to bear to get rid of them, but also the people who are being brought in to replace them.
Yeah, no one's looked at who's being snuck into there, the cockroaches that are being used to fill the gaps.
Yeah, this is just like my thing on the Joe Wilson thing. Nobody's looking at the memo, you know, that came out of Italian intelligence that Bush slipped into his State of the Union address that is what they were trying to cover up. That's what the story they were trying to stop. Amazing. Greg Palast, gregpalast.com, the website, the author of the New York Times bestseller Armed Madhouse and numerous other books. Greg, thanks for being with us today.
Always great. Thanks, Tom.
Always great talking with you. 16 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, the place where we dare to ask, is Walmart a person? And we dare to say, not a chance!
Listening to the Tom Hartman Program, the No Boring Zone, on Air America Radio. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
You're listening to Nova M. Phoenix, 1480 KPHX.
If they counted the votes of me and you, we never would have had these Republican blues. Well, the last 6 years we've been under a curse. It ain't getting better, it's worse and worse. Me and the president, we don't agree. Now the NSA's got a file on me. I've got those blues. Republican blues.
And welcome back. It's the pill that will help you escape the matrix. Air America Radio, the Tom Hartman Program. The folks in the chat room want me to be sure to pass along to you. Today is international. It's not much celebrated in the United States, but International Women's Day. The day when men buy flowers for women so that women will ignore the fact that they make less money and still don't have the rights and powers that they should all around the world. So, indeed, I salute that. I mean, the day, not the state. Heather Vokush is with us, heathervokush.com. Her website, Vokush spelled W-O-K-U-S-C-H. And hey, Heather.
Hey, nice to talk to you.
Great to talk with you again. Are you in Austria?
Well, you know, actually, I'm doing a little tour right now of Democrats Abroad in Germany. And so, I'm calling you from Heidelberg. There's going to be this huge meeting of Democrats Abroad next weekend with people from all over the world, literally. And so I'm here in advance. And speaking of International Women's Day, I wrote an article this morning called War on Terror, War on Women, if anybody's interested in reading a different perspective on International Women's Day, according to Bush.
Well, you want to give us the elevator speech version of it?
Well, I just talk about how we focus on war, and of course this war funding and this war, you know, emphasis takes away from the rights of women. In the most logical, you know, element, it takes away from funding for women's programs. And so my point is that we really must make this link in terms of fighting, and what I mentioned is this next potential expansion in this so-called war on terror, which is the attack on Iran, for example.
Right. Right. Yeah, and not just funding for women's programs like the essentially affirmative action type programs, but or women's health programs, but family programs. I mean, basically just human programs right across the board. I mean,
exactly. I mean, programs for women and kids and stuff. And as you probably know,
even
the
men.
Office of Women's Health was just, you know, they had their funding just cut. I mean, we can't allow this.
Yeah, which brings us to the topic that we're going to talk about. Although, first, let me just plug this. Democrats.com, you're going to be blogging over there on March 16th and 18th from Heidelberg, Germany. And this is a group of expat American Democrats abroad. This is with committees in 47 countries around the United States. Millions of members, 6 million U.S. citizens living overseas. The DNC recognizes 8 voting members from your group, Democrats Abroad, right?
Yeah, you know, and actually those numbers have increased. They call Democrats Abroad the 51st state because it is huge. I mean, it serves as voting delegation, and now they have 17 delegate votes.
Now I just realized they're
in over 75 countries. And so this meeting is going to be, it's really interesting. It's going to be like a microcosm of what goes on in the DNC because they're going to be hashing out resolutions. What do they believe in? You know, and of course one of the resolutions that they're trying to push on at the last minute revolves around Walter Reed and the treatment of veterans because, you know, a lot of the people here in Germany, for example, you know, they deal with Landstuhl Medical Center. This is where the troops go from Iraq and whatever. They have family in the military. They work for the DOD. And, so it's a really intimate place for people's hearts. And so we'll be talking about that next weekend.
We're talking with Heather Vokush, heathervokush.com, her website. We only have about a minute and a half left, Heather. Bush, let's go crazy, the decline in U.S. mental health under Bush. Take a shot at this.
You know, the bottom line is that the Bush administration has gone into denial about people really hurting from mental illness or mental issues. And their solution has been to prescribe heavy-duty psychoactive medication, and they don't do follow-up. Now, the examples in this article involve Katrina, you know, survivors, but also our veterans and the issue of post-traumatic stress syndrome that is not being dealt with. I think it's interesting, for example, they just gave the George Polk Awards, and, well, a number, 3 out of 12 stories dealt with our veterans and how they're not being, you know, treated properly. So, I mean, they have called this the coming mental health tsunami about the number of veterans with post-traumatic stress and other mental health disorders that are not getting care and really are going to be needing care, but the resources aren't there. So I would invite people to go to my website and read the article and just get active doing what we can to support our troops.
Yeah, well said. Heather Vokush, WOKUSCH.com is the website. Heather, the bottom line here is mental illness problems in the United States are being dealt with by the conservatives as an opportunity to make more money for the pharmaceutical industry. And it pretty much stops at that point, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And, you know, the assessment isn't there. Even with our service members, for example, there's a law passed in 1997 that requires the military to conduct assessment of mental health. Well, you know what that is now? It's like a single mental health question on some pre-deployment form. And even then, if they say they have mental health issues, it still isn't addressed. For me, the most poignant reason that I wrote this article was that guy who had ended up killing, you know, the family and then the 14-year-old girl, you know, I think we remember, his name was Stephen Green, this former Army private. Well, it turns out that guy had sought to get medical health, you know.
Right, repeatedly.
Protection.
Repeatedly, he had been trying
to get it. Yeah, right, and he was just given a psychoactive drug. That's not right.
Yep. Yeah, I agree. Heather Vokush, Heather, WOKUSCH.com. Thanks, Heather.
Thank you.
27 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Live on Nova M Phoenix, 1480 KPHX.
Got no money in my pockets. I got a hole in my jeans. I had a job and I lost it, but it won't get to me. 'Cause I'm riding with my baby. On the wings of an angel, flying away.
And welcome back to the place where smart people get their news. 34 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. And time for... look out for this one. Our Jaws alert for the day. A woman accused of running a prostitution ring has threatened to immerse Washington in a sex scandal by saying that she's considering selling 13 years of phone records to raise funds for her legal defense. All over Washington, D.C., politicians, lobbyists, and, you know, probably pretty much everybody except the big shots in the Bush administration, they would be more concerned, I think, if it was Jeff Gannon's little black book that was going, hey, who was he visiting in the White House? Anyhow, so it's interesting to see how this stuff all shakes up. Welcome back to the program. Folks in the chat room, a couple of messages from the chat room here. I've been hanging out. I usually do during the breaks. You can get to our chat room, by the way, by going to tomhartmann.com and just clicking the live chat link up at the top of the page. And it's actually live and interactive. There's probably, I don't know, a little less than 100 people, and they're hanging out and talking with each other at any given time. And first of all, Bill of Rights Man says, Tom, can you mention stopiranwar.com? Yes. In fact, I think I just did. And Liberty Lover and Sailor Bob are having a great conversation, and I just thought this was just such a great quote from Liberty Lover that I wanted to share it with you. He or she, I don't know, said, revenge is a lazy form of grief. Most of us got over that initial reaction. Isn't that great? Revenge is a lazy form of grief. I really like that. Paul in Hudson, Florida. Hey, Paul, welcome to the program.
Hi. Earlier you were talking to that Christian lady, and then you were mentioning to her some of your concepts about what you thought was the fundamental essence of Christianity. I like that's one of my favorites too, about, you know, who gets into heaven, those who treated them. But my
Matthew 25. It's kind of an amplification of the Sermon on the Mount in Matthew, what, 5 through 7 or 7 through 9 or whatever it is.
Right. Yeah.
Your favorite is?
My favorite is the Good Samaritan.
Mm-hmm.
Because in that, you know, it's not subject to, you know, whether it was Peter or Paul. They're asking Jesus. And the question is, who gets eternal life? Now, that's pretty much the big kahuna.
Right. And to keep it in context, the Samaritans weren't, it wasn't just like, you know, some guy had gotten beaten up. The Samaritans were essentially the enemy. They were the other.
Right.
They were the bad guys.
And they were the outcasts, and I don't believe they followed our same spiritual laws, or they had the same God.
Right. I don't recall the specific details, whether it was rampant strain or a renegade strain of Judaism, or whether they were not Jews. But yes, the Samaritans were religiously different, were ethnically different, were culturally different. They were the other. They were the ones that you didn't. Not only did you not cross the street to help them, you didn't even talk to them.
Right.
You didn't do business with them.
So if you have, in other words, if you take the essence of that story, you got the priest who goes by, and, you know, the people who knew the law, who followed our laws, you know, they didn't get in. It wasn't by your obeying our laws. You didn't have to believe our laws or obey our laws or have anything to do with us. You just had to, that story says, you just have to treat your fellow human beings properly, as Jesus said, you know, treat them like they were me. You get into heaven.
There you go. Yeah, and that's why I said I'm more of the by your works shall you be known and the fruit of the tree and all that stuff than the you know what you say. But you know, I think there's room, frankly. I think that there's room in Christianity for all of us, and you know, some folks don't. Paul, thank you for the call. I appreciate it. Max, and I think there's room right across the board for everybody. But Max, and say,
well, I think there should be room for everyone. Also, someday I would like for you to read aloud. If you haven't before. By the way, this is probably your fourth week in St. Louis.
On the Talk Monster there.
Then the Talk Monster, one of your colleagues pronounces it with her delightful accent.
Yeah, we're very
Project
grateful for
the
that.
New American Century's Open Letter to Bill Clinton.
Oh, yeah, 1998. I've never read the entire thing on air, but I've certainly read chunks of it over the last four years.
And they wanted him to essentially to do what George W. Bush eventually did.
Right.
I hope against hope in 19 and excuse me in 04 convention I it was my dream that Bill Clinton would bring that letter out and just sort of summarize it to the convention. Of course he didn't do that. But it, once again, they were on record. They've never hidden. Most Americans still don't know who they are. And when I tell people about them many times, and I've tried to do it as calmly and as slowly as possible, I'm accused of being a conspiratorial nut.
Yeah.
And
well, it's on their website.
Well,
they're proud of it. And it's right there,
you.
Signed by Jeb Bush and signed by Don Rumsfeld and signed by Paul Wolfowitz and signed by Doug Fife and signed by Dick Cheney. And,
well, this
I mean,
is
you know,
how I've turned a lot of people towards this by going to their website to
right.
see if I'm crazy, see who these people are. These are not these are influential people, et cetera, et cetera. A lot of them turned up in the Bush administration, too. But still, most Americans don't know about them. I think if you will look before we invaded, there was a few stories. I think a week before we invaded, Nightline did a story on them. 60 Minutes, about 2 weeks before we invaded, did a story. It was very ill-covered. I called on Democrats. I called on congresspeople. There just was never much. I hate to, you know, I think someday history is going to look back on this and wonder, right in front of our noses, no one yelled.
Hopefully, you know, my concern about that, Max, is that history doesn't look back at what happened in the 1980 election with the theft of that election and the holding of the hostages throughout the election cycle so that Reagan would get elected, and then the payback to the Iranian regime for that of giving them missiles, selling them missiles and spare parts. And then, you know, Bush succeeding in getting Congress to limit its own investigation to not looking at events that happened prior to 1982. I mean, all the Iran-Contra
mm-hmm.
stuff, it's all gone down the memory hole. And, you know, I'm very concerned that the history of what's happening right now is going to get lost in all the fog, too. And Bush trying to create his $500 million library with all these scholars and residents who are going to essentially rewrite history. Max, I got to move along, but I appreciate the call, and thank you for your kind words. But absolutely, a very, very significant point you raise. And you need to check out the Project for a New American Century if you're not familiar with it. Jim in Burbank, California. Hey, Jim, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom, I wanted to talk about that Teresa Tomeo, or however.
Yeah, Tomeo, yeah.
Yeah. Before I do that, I want to give you kudos for putting on Greg Palast, and it's good to hear from him.
Greg's a good guy and an old bud.
I hope that you have him on again after what I'm about to say regarding him.
Okay.
Because, you know, he's a mainstay over at Pacifica Radio Network, and, mm-hmm. you know, that place that... is supported by responsible listeners.
Mm-hmm.
I think that you're sounding more and more like Pacifica Radio Network instead of Air America, and I'm glad that you are doing that.
I am sounding, Jim, like me. I've been doing this program for 4 years. I have not changed, to the best of my knowledge, any of my positions. I've not become more or less outspoken. I've been writing about this stuff and writing books on these topics for the better part of 2 decades. I think I've been fairly consistent, and I'm not trying to be anybody, and I'm not trying to change or influence anybody in this industry anyway to be any particular way. I think that there's a whole bunch of different voices out there, both on this network and on various radio stations, and I honor them all. Frankly, I even honor the conservative voices. I think we need we need debate in this country rather than monologue.
Well, pardon me for being ignorant, but did you have Greg Palast on before?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Greg has been on our program many times over the years.
I stand corrected because I'm a recent listener.
Greg's probably been on this program 20 times. You know, Greg and I have hung out together. We've blurbed each other's books. I've been great for a long time.
Well, you know, the only thing I wanted to mention about that Tomeo was that she's a very materialistic part of her church. To put so much stress on on Jesus's material rising instead of as the main tenet of the whole darn religion rather than his teachings.
Yeah. That's a good way of saying it. I mean, that was essentially the point I was trying to make is, you know, isn't Christianity more than whether or not Jesus was, you know, essentially like the Greek gods, you know, or Mithras, you know, who rose from the dead after 3 days, you know, the myths that had preceded Christianity. Isn't Christianity much more than just that?
Well,
apparently
humans,
she doesn't think so.
Humans are much more than just that. We're material, but we're also spiritual and, you know, intellectual. And our society is very materialistic nowadays. It's very commercial. I mean, you mentioned corporate media. Commercial is the same kind of thing. It's all very biased toward the material.
Well, yeah, and you know, the reality is we do live in a material world, and there is an economic is an economic underfit. I didn't mean that. thank you, Jim. good to hear from you. I got to go here. We got to take a break and make some money, which is a fine thing, by the way, in my opinion. 45 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program, where despair is not an option. Get active. This is Air America Radio.
This is Nova M. Phoenix, 1480 KPHX.
Welcome back. Speaking from behind the good old working class stainless steel microphone here in the People's Republic of Little Beirut, as George Bush Sr. liked to call Portland, Oregon, after he got heckled here some years ago. We were talking with Greg Palast in the last segment, the segment before last, and one of our callers asking about my most recent book. I have 19 books in print, and my most recent is Screwed, The Undeclared War Against the Middle Class and What We Can Do About It. And the new paperback edition of that, which will be out in April, has an afterword by Greg Palast, just in the interest of full disclosure. Ellen Ratner is with us with the Talk Radio News Service in Washington, D.C., talkradionews.com, visiting with us again on the show. Ellen, you got news?
Oh, yes. Just as we finished, Harry Reid announced a joint resolution to revise the United States policy on Iraq. He said that we cannot stay in Iraq forever, that troops should not be policing a civil war, and he quoted from General Petraeus saying that the solution, which apparently said this morning, must be military and won militarily, and no later than 110 days...
No, Petraeus said that the solution must be political.
I'm sorry. Not military, yeah. That's right. Sorry, yeah. I'm going so fast through my notes here.
Okay.
He said that no later than 110 days from the passage of this resolution that they must begin to de-escalate and to redeploy the troops, and that they are looking for unanimous consent to begin debate on Monday, right after the 9/11, in terms of the Republicans trying to get in the way of this debate. They said they asked for three amendments, they're going to get their three amendments, and they are going to go forward with this debate.
Hmm. Interesting. And the Republican response is?
Well, we don't know, because literally this is being announced. They're still downstairs in the Senate here talking about this, and I just sort of ran upstairs so that you would have this.
So, yeah, thank you so much. So the Democrats have finally drawn a line in the sand.
They have, and they say that their goal is to redeploy all combat forces from Iraq by March 31st, 2008, except for a small number for force protection, training and equipping of Iraqi troops, and targeted counterterror operations. But small is what they emphasize.
Now, how does this jive with the fact that the largest construction project in Iraq, which, by the way, is on schedule and under budget, or within budget, is this 122 acres in the green zone, the prime real estate in the entire city of Baghdad, right on the Euphrates River there, where we're building the so-called U.S. Embassy. It's a 22-building compound.
We'll have 5,000 people in it.
That's right, to house 5,000 people with a full-time ambassadorial staff of 1,000, which is more than any U.S. embassy has ever had in the history of the world, world without end, amen. And we're building 17 military bases in that country, most of them as big as or larger than the average military base inside the United States. I mean, we're creating a major presence and major employment contract over there for somebody.
When I was there and I was on Camp Liberty, which is a huge military base, I mean, it just goes on and on, they said that the eventual goal was supposedly to turn over these military bases to the Iraqi military.
They even have a very heavily armed Iraqi Shiite military.
That's correct. That's absolutely
aligned
correct.
With Iran.
Well,
is that what we want?
You know, I just heard somebody say that here we go, and we are supporting Iran and the United States are supporting the same group of people, the Shiites. Now, of course, that puts us in direct conflict with our supposed other buddy, the Saudis.
Yeah, well, and at the same time now, we're, you know, Bush is funneling money to Sunni groups, which, you know, Al-Qaeda, of course, is a Sunni group, and Osama bin Laden is Sunni, and the Saudis, as you point out, in order to take on the Shiite Hezbollah group in southern Lebanon, that we're funding at least three different groups directly aligned with Al-Qaeda. One of them may be Al-Qaeda itself, the Bush administration, off the table, illegally, without budget, without congressional authority, has been funneling money to these Sunni groups to take on the Shia. And then, on the other hand, we're supporting the Shia. It's like, you know, we're in the middle of a civil war, and we don't seem to be making things any better.
We certainly are not making things any better, and it'll be very interesting. I think the real dynamic to watch here is to see whether the Republicans can and try and stage something to prevent this debate from happening on Monday.
Now, Chuck Hagel just announced that he's soon going to announce whether he's going to announce that he's going to run for president as the anti-war candidate on the Republican side. What are your thoughts on that?
I think that Chuck Hagel will do... it depends how much money, obviously. He's certainly going to be a voice, whether he's going to be kind of the Kucinich voice of the Republican Party or whether he has managed behind the scenes to collect enough money to make him a viable candidate remains to be seen. But if he's got the money, he will be very viable.
Well, and he also was the president of what is now the ES&S Voting Machine Company, which counts the votes in about 60% of America, so or some incredible percentage. That's not a bad background to have.
No, it certainly isn't a bad background. But again, you have to even get to the point where you can count the votes however legally or illegally you choose to count them. And to do that, you really need some money.
Yeah, the bottom line. Exactly, yeah. So really, in your opinion, what Hagel is doing by announcing that he may announce is he's saying to the money people in the Republican Party, if you're looking for an anti-war candidate...
That's not Giuliani, although Giuliani is a war candidate.
Right, then come visit me, and this is his trial balloon.
Exactly.
Yeah, well, that makes perfect sense. Absolutely perfect sense. Interesting. Alan Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service. There was one last question I had for you, but we're out of time, but I'll just very quickly. Alan, do you think that there's any possibility that over the weekend this whole Scooter Libby story is going to get back to the Niger documents, which is what Joe Wilson was looking into?
Only hope, but I don't hold out much hope.
Yeah, okay. Alan Ratner, the Talk Radio News Service. Thanks, Alan.
Thank you.
Good talking to you. Coming up on tomorrow's program, Senator Bernie Sanders, our first hour, as he has for the last 3 years now, every Friday, taking your calls from all across America, Brunch with Bernie. Conservative judge in our second hour, conservative judge James L. Buckley is going to stop by. We're going to talk about what does it mean to be a conservative today, and that'll be an interesting debate. Remember, my friends, democracy, and we'll be broadcasting live from Los Angeles, KTLK. Democracy begins with you.
Tom Hartman program on Air America Radio. For exclusive Tom Hartman archives and more information, visit us online at airamericaradio.com.
And tag your it.